It's time!
Hey, Dave, listen up, please.
Sometimes a warrior just has to kind of lay down on the ground for a minute, just stay there for a second and have a good bleed.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know, something amazing.
Matt, for maybe the win.
Gafford, buckle up!
Welcome into the basketball podcast of Mid-America. Seth Campbell joined by Scotty Borderline, writer for WholeHogSports.com. He's been getting us ready for basketball season, and we are in the home stretch of basketball season. It's SEC play, and this is when things are starting to really heat up, and the Razorbacks have heated up since last time we talked to you with a road victory and a victory at home, and doing the victory at home over Vanderbilt in impressive fashion, winning by 20 points, Scotty.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. Jimmy Witt had the best game of his college career, which spans, you know, Arkansas his freshman year, a couple of years at SMU, and then obviously transferred back to Arkansas. He went for 30 points against Vanderbilt, and, you know, just did a little bit of everything. You know, he obviously, anytime Jimmy Witt gets going, the first thing you think about is he gets the mid-range jumper working, and he had that working to his advantage for the most part. He struggled a little bit in the middle of the floor. I think I had him like for 2 for 7 or 2 of 8, but he was good on the left and the right side of the floor. Knocked down 2 jumpers apiece from those areas. I thought he was really good, like in that dunker spot. You know, we've heard Musselman talk about how Jimmy kind of inverts Arkansas's offense because he's, you know, you start the game and, or, you know, if Arkansas wins the tip or whatever, Jimmy's arguably more often than not going to be the guy that's bringing the ball up the floor and initiating the offense. But the way the game played out on Wednesday, you know, Mason Jones kind of played the facilitator role and Jimmy Witt was kind of working the dunker spot, just kind of working short corner to short corner. And Mason Jones did a great job of, you know, finding him for easy buckets. And he ends up with a career high 30. So not a bad night for Jimmy.
From your observation of Mus so far in his Arkansas career, we're just a little bit over halfway through the season, that dunker spot, you know, as you mentioned, which he inverts most of the time with Jimmy. How important is that in this offense?
Oh, I think it's really important, and it's also very important to have the right guy in that spot because Jimmy, you know, I keep a shot chart for every game, and Jimmy is dangerous in those short corners, very dangerous. And anytime you can get a guy into a spot where he's really comfortable, you know, Jimmy can just catch and shoot on those short corner jumpers, or, you know, he can catch in the short corner. Maybe if he's a little bit farther out, maybe if he's maybe a step or two closer to the 3-point line. Opponents know that he's not a threat from 3-point range, although he did attempt his first three of the game against Vanderbilt, last second type deal at the end of the first half. But, you know, he can, you know, I talked to him, I think it was on Monday before we got Musselman to preview the Vanderbilt game. And Jimmy said, you know, shooting is just kind of a rhythm for him. And, you know, anytime he can, you know, he can work himself into one of those jumpers, 1-2 dribbles, and work himself into a rhythm. And anytime he gets to that point, you know, he feels like anytime the ball's coming off its hands, it's going to go through. I think Mus is really good at identifying, you know, personnel and getting the right guys in the right spots. And Jimmy tore up Vanderbilt, not just with the jumper, but, you know, he would catch in the short corner. Maybe the defender was expecting a mid-range jumper, and he'd put the ball on the floor and get to the hole too. And had a great night. And he was, you know, I talked to him at the beginning of the season, I think at Media Day. He's kind of a thinker of the game, and it's just really interesting to listen to him after the game because, I mean, he was talking like he just had kind of an average night after the game. He's a really humble dude, and I think he understands that, you know, he had a great game, helped Arkansas get a win, but now you've kind of got to flush it and start getting ready for this weekend, which is going to be really fun.
Yeah, this weekend is going to be huge. Kentucky coming to town, and, you know, the downside to us doing a once a week podcast, Scotty, is that the first game of the week, which is normally on a Saturday, kind of gets overlooked for what just happened recently. And it doesn't make just a whole lot of sense to talk about a game that's almost a week old. But I do want to talk just a little bit about Arkansas, because that was a fantastic game for the Razorbacks on the road to come back and beat Ole Miss 76-72.
No 11-point lead in the second half against Arkansas is safe. I think we've learned that.
Yeah, it's like you don't want the 24-3 lead.
Yeah, in football. In football. Yeah, exactly.
If you're the Falcons and the Patriots, you don't want the 3-1 lead in the NBA. You don't want that 11-point lead in the second half against Arkansas.
Yeah, it's just not safe. And Isaiah Joe, you know, I remember, and I know people who read me and listen to this podcast will probably get so tired of me talking about it, but just covering Isaiah in high school, he's got such incredible range, and he just saw him blossom. You know, just I covered him his sophomore year at Northside, and at that time, you know, he was just kind of a catch and shoot guy in the corner who had, you know, teammates just set him up more often than not, and we saw his game slowly but surely start to develop. Where he, by his senior year, he'd already won a state championship, and he was kind of the primary ball handler for that Northside team after Tevin Brewer graduated. And Tevin, shout out to him, is at FIU right now, 5'7" guard. He's one of the best players I've ever covered. He was unbelievable. But Isaiah's just, he's always had great range, and his coaches have always told him, you know, anytime you can see the rim when you're across half court, within reason, you got the green light to pull the trigger. And Isaiah's coach in high school used to get mad at him when he didn't shoot sometimes, just because anytime you've got a guy who can shoot that way and just shoot with the efficiency that Isaiah does, you obviously you want him to get as many attempts as he can. So, and I think he hit 7 threes at Ole Miss. Tied a career high 34 points, and you know, I wrote about it, I think, on Monday. Isaiah had struggled really, hit like he was, I think, shooting under 15% from three in the corners this season before that Ole Miss game, and then he went 4-for-4 there. So more than half of his threes in that game came from a spot on the floor where he was really struggling, and so he kind of maybe broke out a little bit there. But 5-of-7 from three in the second half against Ole Miss, that was pretty remarkable. But also on top of his shooting, he was great defensively. He had a big block in the second half that led to a run out for Desi Seals, which turned into an and one. And then, you know, in the final 30 seconds of the game, he comes up with a big steal on the defensive end too that kind of sealed it. And then he went to the free throw line and pretty much put the game on ice. So huge all around game from Isaiah.
I thought Musselman's comments after the game were pretty funny. He was feeling himself and saying that, hey, I'm glad that we switched to that defense to stop Tyree. And, you know, they would have somebody, they would face guard him with Jimmy Witt, and then they would have somebody else. It was most of the time Desi Seals, I think it was almost all the time Desi Seals, would come off and handle the ball handler, whoever that was at the time. It normally wasn't Tyree because Jimmy was guarding him, but they'd have somebody else. And he was like, the last 8 minutes of the game, we did that. He said, then my wife was at a gymnastics?
It was like a dance rehearsal or recital or something in St. Louis.
And he comes back and he tells her that, and, you know, that they won. And she says, well, why didn't you do that the whole game?
Right.
And he goes, welp, okay then. But
worked out very well.
I think that it was the right time because they were trying different things that weren't working. And then all of a sudden, you know, I don't want to say that a last resort is to face guard a guy and try and take him out of the offense completely. But when you face guard a person like they did with Witt, it does take Witt, you know, you're taking Tyree out of the equation, trying to anyway, but you're also taking Witt, and so you're basically trying to guard the other four with four, and there's a reason why there's five guys on the court. There's a reason why you try and play defense with five guys. But it was a last second, not last second, but it was almost a last ditch effort by Musselman to try and do something, and it worked out really well.
It was a great defensive shakeup, I think, because you do that. I think it's very unexpected, because Musselman said that they did that for 4 years at Nevada and had some success with it, but they hadn't had time yet in his tenure at Arkansas to even really work on that in practice. But the guys were just, it was kind of an impromptu move, and the guys just, they made it work. And now once Kermit Davis sees that defensive adjustment for Arkansas, he's got to make an adjustment himself. And I think it was either Devontae Shuler or Brian Tyree saw the double, the soft trap coming, and Ole Miss had to burn a timeout because it just caught them so off guard. And I don't think there may have been one time when Ole Miss scored against that, but otherwise, I mean, it served its purpose. And I think it in a game where Arkansas, it didn't seem like Arkansas could come up with consecutive stops, that defensive stretch for Arkansas and that adjustment, just throwing a different wrinkle at Ole Miss, I think that really made all the difference. And obviously you got to go down on the other end and score. And Isaiah Joe, you know, took care of that part.
Yeah, he said, "I got you on that one, Scotty. No big deal. I'll go down on the other end and score." Okay, so moving on. That was the Ole Miss game. You know what happened there. All right, Arkansas versus Vanderbilt game that just happened. Arkansas winning 75-55, and this was just an all-around team effort. Vanderbilt, they're trying to figure out an offense without the top scorer in the SEC. You got to give them that. But they're also, even with that top scorer in the SEC, they weren't just the best team in the league. Let's be honest. And so Arkansas really needed to come in. A lot of people were saying this is the definition of a trap game, which it really was. But Arkansas took care of business, ended up winning by 20, and they rebounded, Scotty. They actually had more rebounds than Vanderbilt, only the third time that's happened this season.
Yeah, it was. I think Arkansas got a great rebounding effort from Desi Sills, and I will pay anybody $20 to go up to Desi Sills and tell him that he's not 6'6", because the kid rebounds like a player like Adriel Bailey or Mason Jones, and I think he finished with a career high 7 against Vanderbilt. And anytime you can just get, I don't want to call it like necessarily a complimentary effort on the glass, but you don't expect a 6'1 guard to go almost, would he lead him in rebounding?
No, Jones had, that's assist, I'm sorry. Yeah, Jones had 7, Witt had 8.
Okay, so he's one off the team high.
Yeah.
In rebounding. Like, I don't want to call that a complimentary effort, but that's a huge plus.
Because Witt led the team in rebounding, but he's almost expected to. And I know that that's also weird coming from the guard spot. But as we mentioned earlier, he also plays that dunker spot. So he's down below a little bit more. If they ever go to that 5-guard lineup, which they didn't do very often, if at all, against Vanderbilt.
Reggie Chaney was too good.
And I think they only went to with 2 seconds left in the first half because they wanted 5 shooters out there, and that's when Witt got the 3. But Witt is almost expected to get those rebounds. It's one of the reasons why he was brought in, because he's such a good rebounding guard. So when you get those 7, you expect him to get 8, but when you get 7 from someone else like Sills, that helps your team out a whole lot.
Oh, definitely. And it's just, we've seen that more than once from Desi. And we talked about it before, I'm sure. It just kind of speaks to just how fearless Desi is. And like I said, you can't tell him that he's not 6'6". Like, he plays like it. He attacks the rim like it. And I saw a tweet last night, and I thought it was great. Desi Sills in transition attacking the rim. The last person in the building that I would want to be is that defender who's backpedaling, trying to stop him from getting to the rim. That's not a great position to be in. And Desi's played really consistently. And I was looking at his KenPom page last night, and since the Indiana game, he scored 10, 13, 8, 9, and 13, and he's grabbed, you know, 5 or more rebounds twice in that stretch too. Desi's playing really well, and he's only got 1 turnover in his last 5 games. Last year, during his freshman year, Desi was kind of going through some growing pains, I think, just trying to, not saying that he wasn't ready for the college game, but I think sometimes things were moving just a little bit too fast for him, and it didn't seem like he could play extended minutes without, you know, turning the ball over 3 times, 4 times. But he seems like he's really coming into his own, and he's doing this while he's, like, I think he's 3 of 13 from 3, and he's still finding other ways to contribute. And that's the kind of growth that you love to see in a second year guy.
That's what I've written multiple times while I'm taking notes during the game, writing stuff down. Multiple times I've written Desi Sills slasher. Like, that is what he is. He slashes to the hole. He finishes with the left hand more often than not, so he can drive to that opposite side of the rim that a lot of guys don't drive to. He really gets defenders, like you said, off balance, Scotty. And so when you can have those guys that are off balance, and then he can hit the occasional three. He's not going to be prolific from beyond the arc, but he's going to shoot them. He's better than a Jimmy Witt from beyond the arc. But when you have that in that repertoire, and you can depend anywhere from 8 to 15 from that guy in a night, that's what the Razorbacks need in this lineup, is a complimentary effort to somebody like if Witt goes off for 30, or when Jones goes off for however many points he scores most of the time, if he goes off for 30 or plus, or Joe. You have to have that complimentary 15, 8 to 15 coming from somewhere, or else they will just start to guard Joe, Jones, Witt, the hot hand that night, and you don't have any answers.
Yeah, he is the perfect role player for this team right now. And in every game, you know, I've got my notebook with me and I track Isaiah Joe, Mason Jones, Desi Sills, their threes, catch and shoot, threes off the dribble going each direction, and their twos and their 2-point attempts off the bounce going each direction. Desi was 3 of 4 moving left, which is, like you mentioned, that's obviously his strong suit. He late in the game, he knocked down, you know, he shot faked, I think, in the left corner in front of Arkansas's bench, and then stepped into a nice mid-range jumper and buried it. Like, that's growth right there in itself. And he was, you know, he attacked the rim off his with his right hand one time too and got a layup to drop. So 4 out of 5 off the bounce last night, just kind of keeping defenses honest in terms of, you know, that one time that he went off the bounce going right, he was great. Just you want to see that continue. And, you know, Kentucky coming in on Saturday, he's not faced this season guards like Kentucky has. Like, Ashton Higgins is a problem defensively. He's one of the best defenders in the country. And not only are those guards talented, like, they're long, they're freaky athletic. And then, you know, if he were to get by a couple of those guards and get into the paint, they've got some trees around the rim too, EJ Montgomery and Nick Richards. So I don't expect Desi to back down at all. Like, I just don't, and wouldn't surprise me if he gets in the lane and creates some contact and you know, gets to the line a few times and forces, you know, officials to blow their whistle.
All right, true or false, Scotty, if I told you that Mason Jones would have 1 point and Arkansas would win by 20 over Vanderbilt, would you believe me?
Maybe against Vanderbilt, but any other team, no, not at all. I think the Vanderbilt game ended the most consistent scoring stretch that Mason's had in his Arkansas career. I think he was in double figures his previous 6 games. He'd never scored in double figures in more than 3 consecutive games before this little stretch for him. But he did so many other things pretty well. Like, he finished with 8 assists too.
That's what I was going to we're going to get to for sure, is that Mason scored 1 point. And if you were talking about Mason from last year, I think that would have affected his entire game.
Right.
That you would have seen him only play, you know, maybe 20 minutes tops. He wouldn't have gotten into the rebounding column, into the assist column. But the growth we were talking about from Desi, we've also seen from Mason. He had 1 point, but Mason did not play bad whatsoever. In fact, he had a plus minus of 17.
Is that team best? It's got to be up there. I remember at one point during the game, we were talking about it. He hadn't scored yet, but he was, like, still a plus 17.
Yes, and Witt came in with 20, a plus 20, and then Sills ended up with a plus 19. So his third best, and he had 1 point. That's growth from that man right there.
Yeah, he's just finding ways to manufacture points. And I think we've mentioned it earlier, like, sometimes you can tell what kind of day Mason is going to have in terms of scoring the ball, like, in the first few minutes of the game, because a lot of times he's going to be the guy that lets that first shot fly on Arkansas's first possession, and it's almost always going to come from the left wing. It might be a catch and shoot, or it might be one of his patented step backs that he's so good at. But sometimes you can kind of see if he's going to have a good scoring day just kind of right off the bat. He didn't have a shot going at all. And I think it when he saw, like, his first 4 or 5 shots miss, he kind of got a little bit hesitant. And Eric Musselman was pissed.
Oh, yeah.
At one point, Mason catches on the left wing, like, literally as close from me and you to Musselman, and didn't let the shot fly from the left wing. He's wide open. and he didn't let it go. And I asked Musselman after the game, I said, did you think that Mason was maybe a little bit too passive? And he said, well, I don't know if you can read lips or not, but at one point I was telling him that he needs to shoot the ball.
In those exact words, right?
Yeah, and Seth, I think, can read lips, and he saw the whole thing happen. But yeah, he was a little bit passive at times, but you can't. I think he understood that he just didn't have it. Like, he just didn't have his touch. He looked to set up teammates, maybe to a fault at times, because some of the entry feeds that he was giving teammates were, you know, getting deflected or knocked out of bounds, whatnot. Still finished with 8 assists. And over the last 2 games, he's got 17. And you look at his KenPom page, he's got the 6th best assist rate in the conference through 4 league games. He's assisting on over 30% of Arkansas's scores when he's on the floor, which is a terrific mark.
There were just, I'm not going to say this is very often, but maybe 2 to 3 times that game when he drove to the basket and everybody in the arena and even the 5 players or the 9 other players on the court thought that he was going to shoot, and he dished. And it either turned into a turnover or went out of bounds off of Vanderbilt. But there was only 2 or 3 times like that. But you could tell that it wasn't going to be a genuine trademarked Mason game that we had seen in the past 6-7 games, because he was driving and not looking to be aggressive and finish at the rim. And you could tell that that was different even from his teammates, because his teammates were expecting him to finish. So I expect that there will be a different Mason Jones on the court against Kentucky, and Arkansas is going to need a different Mason Jones on the court against Kentucky.
Arkansas needs the killer Mason Jones to show up on Saturday, no doubt.
Yeah, if they don't have him, Arkansas needs every weapon that they can. They need Isaiah Joe to shoot well, they need Sills to slash, and they need Jones to do it all. If he's open, he doesn't need to hesitate from 3 range. If he can drive and set up other teammates, because do you want to go ahead and get into Kentucky prep here a little bit, Scotty?
Whatever
you
want to do.
Do you have anything more?
I'll just add this, that Jalen Harris, we talked about him a little bit on last week's show. Jalen has kind of been flying under the radar as a guy who's coming off the bench and playing his role about as well as he can. In conference play, he's played 81 minutes and hasn't turned the ball over. And he's got 12 assists in that span.
Dang.
The man is playing really well, taking care of the ball. And talk about another factor against Kentucky on Saturday. Jalen is athletic enough, quick enough to at times break down defenses. At that, once he does that, maybe gets into the lane, gets inside the arc, he's got to continue to make great decisions. Because, I mean, Kentucky is long, and I have no idea what their deflection numbers are. Don't even know if they track them, but they've got to be one of the best in the league in that regard. So he's got to be his decision-making's got to be sharp, and he's got to put his passes on the money.
And before we move on, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Chaney, 14 points. He had a coming-out party, and
absolutely.
I think we have seen – the last of Gene Tosilla. As sad as it is, Silich came in, grad transferred over. He had his opportunities against Ole Miss, and Musselman said he didn't do poorly in that game at all.
Rebounded the ball well.
Yeah, he just said that he was rusty because he hadn't played a lot, and he made a few mental mistakes. Chaney comes in at the end of that game. You see where when Bailey needs a rest in the end of the Ole Miss game, in the second half, he ends up going with Chaney instead of going back with Silla. And then Chaney has the game of 14 points, 2 for 2 from the free throw line, 6 of 6 from the field. He didn't miss. And then also grabbed 3 rebounds, 2 assists. I think that Chaney will be the second option after Bailey now. And Bailey hasn't had just a fantastic 2 or 3 game stretch here. I mean, he's done his role. Like, not, don't get me wrong about that, but
he's not been a net negative at any point.
He just seems to be getting sometimes in foul trouble, getting quick, easy fouls that he doesn't agree with necessarily and are kind of 50-50 calls, but they've been going against him recently. But Chaney, 14 points, was a key cog for the Razorbacks, the second leading scorer on the team against Vanderbilt. And maybe this is a coming out party for Reggie.
Yeah, we saw earlier in the year too, I forget which game it was, but I remember after that game, I think Reggie finished with like 5 points, 11 boards, and several assists. And I'm like, I asked Musselman after the game, I was like, can this be a springboard for Reggie? Well, turns out it really wasn't. He had a really rough stretch against Texas A&M and LSU, had the technical foul at LSU, and then against Texas A&M's first three times he touches the ball, turns the ball over. And so he's kind of, after that LSU game in the doghouse a little bit, But I liked the energy that he played with at Ole Miss too, even though he didn't really, like, you looked at the box score, he's probably not the first, second, third, fourth, or fifth guy that you look at. I thought he played okay, and I think getting back on the floor and just kind of putting some of the past mistakes behind him was big. And then against Vanderbilt, he was awesome. And I think he was Arkansas's second leading scorer at halftime, had 8 points. I think he really likes dunking on Vanderbilt players, because he did that last year in Bud Walton. Like, he put a kid on a poster last year in Bud Walton. We've got the picture somewhere in our photo shelter account. But he did that again on Wednesday, and by halftime, he scored a season-high 8 points and dished out a couple of assists. I think Jimmy Witt knocked down a jumper on one of Chaney's assists really close to halftime. And Reggie just played his tail off. And I mentioned this in my story. His game against Vanderbilt kind of continued this trend of him playing well when he sees the floor for 20 or more minutes. He's done it 10 times in his career. In those 10 games, he's averaging almost 10 points, 5.5 rebounds, and has blocked, I think, 22 shots, and he's finished with 4 more assists 3 times. That's really productive. Like, that's really good stuff. And I think it comes down to confidence with Reggie. And more to that, I think anytime Reggie gets on the floor and he has something positive happen kind of early in his run, then we tend to see Reggie play pretty well. If things kind of go poorly in the first couple minutes he's on the floor, we can kind of see him disappear a little bit, or, you know, maybe negatively impact the game. But I didn't really see much negative out of Reggie against Vanderbilt, and that was huge. I had friends texting me during the game talking about how, you know, just important that stretch was for Reggie just going into Kentucky.
Yeah, now you'll have a fresh Bailey to compete against Kentucky as well, because he didn't play just a whole lot. Let's see how many minutes. Bailey only had 18 minutes, so Chaney had more minutes with 21 than Bailey did.
I think Adrio fouled out.
He did foul out. He was getting picked on by the refs a little bit, it seemed like.
Yeah, he got picked on by a Vanderbilt player too. At Ooh, one point.
Yeah, that's a segment we'll call You Hate to See It. You hate to see it, Scotty, but he got dunk eye there for a second. The guy just rose up and...
Hey, but he, after the game, he said it comes with it. It comes with it. Like, he's been on the good end of that with the Valpo game, where he just stuffed the kid at the top of the square. And, you know, sooner or later, it's all gonna even out. So it just kind of comes with it. And you like to see that attitude, too, because he wasn't shying away from trying to block the dunk against Vanderbilt. But sometimes you can't come out on the positive end of things all the time.
Especially when you're as tall as Bailey is playing the post. Bailey has extreme leaping ability.
Yeah, he's freaky athletic for sure.
But when you're playing the post for that long, you're going to get somebody that's going to have the momentum and the height and the length
Somebody's
to just
get
over
you. Yep.
And so it's going to happen. So I like the attitude that he has of it happens, it'll be all right, and I'll move on from it. All right. To break up the monotony just a little bit here, Scotty, before we get to this Kentucky preview, we're going to play a quick little game. You ready?
Let's do it.
What shirt will Musselman wear next to the press conference? I had a running bet, and mine, I was saying for the past two, I thought that he'd bring out a Kettle Brand potato chips shirt, and he surprised me with the Raising Cane's after the Hogs hit the Cane's challenge yesterday to get
the
75 points. Thanks to Witt,
yes,
and Chaney,
yes,
both of those guys ending with the last 4 points, and then the best part about it is when they had 73 after Witt got to 30. That they needed 2 more points, and the entire student section is in the stands holding up 2 fingers, going, two, we need 2.
Yeah, those kids need some free food, man.
They deserved it. And I don't know if you've noticed, but they did raise the price, or raise the score, because it used to be 70. It used to be if you got 70. And I think this is only, what, the third or fourth time that the Hogs have hit Canes this basketball season. It used to be every single time. If the Razorbacks were at Bud Walton Arena and got the win, then you could expect Canes. But it hasn't been that way this year with, I think, the different offense that Musselman's running, and then the raising of the limit from 70 to 75 has hurt a little bit. But he came in with the Kane shirt.
That shirt was something else too, man.
It was the dog. Like,
it was a Labrador puppy with a red bandana on, and it had the Raising Cane's logo on it.
But all of his shirts, no matter what logo they have in the middle, whether it's Taco Bell, Pepsi, or whatever, it always has that hog in the top right corner. These are custom made for him.
Yeah. Yeah, they're sharp. I don't know what t-shirt he's going to wear next. If Arkansas wins, if Arkansas wins on Saturday, he's going to be on cloud nine, because his team's going to be in the top 25 for the first time in more than 2 years. But if they lose, I would kind of expect him to maybe just come in wearing whatever he did on the sideline. But if Arkansas wins, he might come in there shirtless. I mean, we've seen him shirtless,
yeah,
not at Arkansas, but at Nevada after they won, I think, a Mountain West Conference championship. He's running around the floor without a shirt on. I know his wife doesn't like it, but it's fun. I don't know. I might go with, I might go with Tyson again, or maybe Taco Bell. I think those are two good options for
going
him.
For some repeats.
Yeah.
I put out a poll somewhere in a conversation I had with some friends, and so I'm trying to find that poll to see. I was trying to find other sponsors that we have, because that's what you got. He came into Canes. I was thinking we have Yarnell's as a sponsor that he hasn't come in yet. He's coming in Tyson. I said Kettle Brand Chips. He hasn't done J.B. Hunt yet. Whataburger, when the Whataburger Fry Shuffle or whatever, he hasn't done Whataburger yet. So those are just some that I could come up with off the top of my head. It's almost time for him to repeat. They've got to be running out of official sponsors somewhere in there, right?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to run out of ideas for t-shirts, though. That doesn't seem like, Arkansas comes up with so many unique, like, shooting shirts for games. Like, almost every game, it's something different. And I don't think, I'm kind of going back on what I said. I don't think we'll probably see the same thing that we have in the past. He'll probably shake it up. If he walks in there with a Whataburger shirt, he's going to make me have to go get some after the game.
That's the whole goal. That is the whole goal.
That's true. Marketing's working.
He's so good at marketing. I mean, we knew that coming in. Like, we knew that he was so good at social media. We knew that that was his shtick at Nevada, and he figured out that that's a way that he could go about things. And we also knew that the grad transfer market was him. Well, he's come in, and he's shown that he's not going to just stop because he's at a different program. And the optics of things may be just slightly different. He's on social media. After the game, we are in the press room writing up whatever. We're trying to post whatever to our different variant. All the media people are trying to post to their various media websites. And all of a sudden, we just hear yelling. And it sounds like it's coming from down the hall.
And I got up. I was in the middle of transcribing quotes. And I get up and I peek my head down the hallway and I don't see anybody. And as soon as I sit back down, I hear the yelling again. And I'm like, I'm not getting back up to see what it was, but...
And the weird thing is, we're not really near the Arkansas locker room where we transcribe in the basement of Bud Walton Arena, but we are pretty close to the Vanderbilt locker room. And I was thinking, Vanderbilt got beat by 20. There's no way that they're celebrating like that. And they should already have been gone, in all honesty. So I was trying to figure out what it is. Well, check Twitter this morning and you found out what it is.
Yeah, so Musselman, Anthony Ruta, Pat Ackerman, Musselman's two boys, Hayes Myers and Riley Hall are standing right at the front of the student section, and they're just cheering and they're holding up different signs. One of them says, "Hey, Dickie V, can I get a picture?" Ruta is holding a sign that says, "It must we trust." And Riley Hall is holding a sign that's got ESPN in bold red letters on the left side of the poster. And it reads, "Eric sips Pepsi nightly."
Perfect.
And so they're just getting everybody hyped for the Kentucky game. Like 20 minutes after the Vanderbilt game ended, it just doesn't stop.
That's a marketing mind right there, though. And that's Muss's mind in the fact of that he's even instilled in his players of when you come off the court after a Vanderbilt game or after a Montana State game, your next opponent is up on the whiteboard. You're going to know their strengths and weaknesses. You're going to leave Bud Walton Arena on Wednesday night prepared for your game on Saturday. Now, you're not going to be as prepared as he expects you to be when you get to practice and what you're going to do in practice, but you're going to know at least the five starters that Kentucky's going to run out there, and their top eight guys, you're going to know something about them, and you're going to leave with that in your mind. That is Eric Musselman to the fullest, preparing for everything in marketing or in-game strategy. That just oozes over in his program. It just seeps into every single facet, and you can tell by the way that they prepared.
Reggie Chaney came into the post game last night. I think somebody asked him just how excited is the team to be getting ready to play, you know, maybe the biggest game that we've seen in Bud Walton Arena in a long time. And Reggie's like, yeah, well, we know that they like to dribble drive. I'm like, so they're already like beating those team tendencies into those guys' heads, and they're not even out of their uniform yet from the game they just played. They're already getting them ready for Saturday. So it's been pretty neat to kind of follow that.
Speaking of Saturday, Musselman was asked at the press conference if he expects the atmosphere to be the best that he has witnessed ever. And this is a guy that's coached in the NBA, coached multiple teams. He was with his dad when they were coaching the Timberwolves, coached all around and taken Nevada to multiple NCAA tournaments. This is what he said.
Yeah, probably. Hopefully. Hopefully we'll give our, you know, like it's up to your, you know, it's up to the players to create the energy.
You think that man is excited for Saturday night, Scotty?
I think so, maybe just a little bit.
If he thinks that it's going to be the best environment, he's already hyped it up. He's hyped it up on Twitter. Everybody is, I mean, they're going to tailgate before this game. It's a 3 o'clock tip. Dickie V is going to be in town. It's on ESPN. The hype is all there. Now, Kentucky didn't really come through on their end, losing on a buzzer beater to South Carolina in a game that they held a 15-point lead. Did they not?
Yeah, I think it was a 14-point lead in the second half and lost on a It's really kind of a BS buzzer beater, banked in three at the buzzer. But
Arkansas has been the benefactor of one of those this year,
right,
too.
Right, so. Exactly. That kind of thing happens.
But all of this momentum, and Kentucky will still be ranked in the top 10 because the new AP poll doesn't come out until later after the game. They won't come out until Monday morning, so they'll still be in the top 10. And you have an opportunity. You know, Vanderbilt wasn't a quadrant one win. You have good wins over Indiana. You've beaten a good Georgia Tech team, but those are not great teams. This is your litmus test right now. This is what you can compare to. This is what everybody in the SEC compares themselves to. If you can beat Kentucky, then you are a top team in this league. Do you want to be a top team in this league? You want to be top four? Go out there and compete against Kentucky. That's what the opportunity is presented in front of you today, or on Saturday.
Right. And I think, gosh, I can't remember who it was after, which player it was after Arkansas beat Ole Miss. It may have been Isaiah Joe. He said, we've got a motto on this team, and it's you don't lose at home and you don't lose two in a row. So Arkansas went to Ole Miss on Saturday, backs really against the wall for maybe the first real – for the first point in the season, like it was for real. Like you might be seeing this team slip a little bit, but it got a terrific effort in like the last 15 minutes at Ole Miss. You prevent – the second consecutive loss from happening. Now you're back at home. You take care of business against Vanderbilt, which you should have. And now you've got another chance to protect your home floor and notch a huge win on your resume. That would put Arkansas at 15-2. Think about that. 15-2.
In Musselman's first year.
And we're approaching late January. That's a pretty big deal. And then you'd move to 4-1 in league play. And nobody could take that win from you at that point. Nobody. And I'm really looking forward to it. And Kulo Garland's been on Twitter saying every seat needs to be filled in Bud this Saturday. And I don't think there's going to be.
I don't think there's going to be an empty one. All right. As we wrap it up here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, Seth Campbell, join alongside Scotty Bordeline. You can follow him on Twitter. Scotty, drop your handle.
It's at NWA Scotty. S-C-O-T-T-I-E.
He gives you good information all throughout the games, and he'll also tweet out his stories there if you want to follow him on wholehogsports.com too. You can find him there. All right. Give me what you think from this Kentucky game. What are going to be, I guess, your keys to this game, Scotty?
Ooh, I think Arkansas is like the crowd on Saturday is going to be phenomenal. Like before the game, you're going to be able to feel the anticipation in the arena. Imagine when everybody gets into the arena, like even in pregame warmups, there's not going to be many people sitting down. Like people are going to be really antsy. to get this thing going. Arkansas's got to give the crowd a reason to really get into it. You got to make shots early. You got to defend. You got to rebound. Prevent second chance points for Kentucky. Because they are monsters on the glass. Like I said earlier, EJ Montgomery and Nick Richards are a handful. And then Kentucky's also got some really good guards. They've got great guard play. Emmanuel Quickly and Ashton Hagans are two of the best guards in the league, bar none. You just got to give the crowd a reason to get into the game and be a factor. And I think Musselman kind of alluded to that when someone asked him, do you expect the Kentucky crowd to be the best atmosphere that you've coached in? And he said he does anticipate it being loud and does anticipate it being just a great atmosphere. But again, they have to give the crowd a reason to get loud. And I think getting off to a quick start and then just kind of maintaining your energy and intensity, I think that's it. Got to continue to take care of the ball. Arkansas has been taking care of the ball great in conference. You got to keep doing that. Ashton Hagans is going to make things hard because he's defensively, he's going to turn more guys over than the average defender. So those are just a few things. You just can't get bullied on the glass. And second chance points, I think, are going to be big. Because I think if even though Kentucky blew a double-digit lead at South Carolina, I can't, you know, if Kentucky gets up double figures, I don't know that Arkansas is built to come back from a double-digit deficit against that kind of team. So I think just preventing just kind of easy buckets, I think that's going to be huge.
All right, Arkansas, Kentucky, 3 o'clock Saturday. Khalil Garland wants every seat in Bud Walton Field. You better get there. It's going to be an insane atmosphere. Scotty will be there. I will be there. Everybody that I've talked to in the media is going to be there. So everybody in Northwest Arkansas and around the state be there for a great atmosphere. And probably one of the best atmospheres that I will be a part of in Bud Walton Arena could happen on Saturday. So make sure to get there. And we will be here next week to recap that game and then Arkansas's next game as well. So stay with us. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or anywhere where podcasts are served. You can find the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, which is a part of the Whole Hog Sports Podcasting Network. You have anything else, Scotty, to add before we head on out?
I think we're good, man. I'm just looking forward to this weekend. It's got the potential to be one of the more memorable weekends in a very long time. A
lot of expectations. We'll see if the game lives up to it. As I said, 3 o'clock on Saturday. Until next week, for Scotty Borderline, I'm Seth Campbell, signing off.